Welcome to Newcastle Libraries Reel. This is our children's series. Newcastle Libraries can be accessed from wherever you live with the Newcastle Library app. Put borrowing at your fingertips. I invite you to close your eyes and imagine. Imagine that there are no buildings, no roads, no cars, just the trees, plants, animals, and the very first storytellers of this land, the Awabakal and Worimi people. So I acknowledge them as the traditional custodians of this beautiful land in which we live.
Welcome to our podcast series for families, Chats with fabulous children's authors and illustrators. I'm Karen Eastwood, and each episode I will chat to authors and illustrators who are connected to this creative city of Newcastle.
I love all the books. Probably grab chapter books because I'm really into them.
And the reasons I like reading is because it's enjoyable, relaxing and interesting.
Welcome to Chats with fabulous children's authors and illustrators. My name's Karen Eastwood and with me today is Deb Kelly, author of The Thing About Oliver. Now this book has been shortlisted for the CBCA Book of the Year for younger readers. How are you, Deb?
Great, how are you?
Really good, thanks. So we're going to be talking good. A little bit about your work and about the processes behind your writing and things that inspire you. So first question I'd like to ask you is about your latest book, The Thing About Oliver. So what's the background to developing this story and why did you write it?
Okay, well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll try and keep it brief. I've had the privilege of knowing several kids on the autism spectrum and their families over the years, and I noticed there's quite a lot of support out there for kids on the spectrum now, which is fantastic. But often the siblings of these kids are overlooked, and they're sometimes referred to as glass children because it can feel to them as though their overstretched parents look right through them. They grow up very quickly. They're often expected to take on far more responsibility than other children their age, and they can feel really guilty about having their own problems and worries, which pale in comparison to those of their sibling. And they also struggle with feelings of resentment and guilt towards their parents and the sibling with special needs. So I've tried to portray life with an autistic sibling as truthfully and accurately as possible to give glass children a voice. But it's also a story about a 12-year-old girl learning to embrace change, dealing with family relationships. And those are things that I think all kids can relate to, whether they have a sibling with special needs or not.
And that's the power of a story, really, isn't it? To give that perspective and to provide that voice for those children.
Yeah, well, I was trying to, I guess, represent the glass children in a story, and also provide an opportunity for other kids to have an insight into their world and help cultivate empathy towards others. I think that's a major role of books as well.
Oh, for sure. You're covering so many factors there. So it's multi-purpose.
I think that's why it took me 6 years to from seed of idea to finished book. It was really a six-year process.
Yeah. Well, one of the next questions was actually what were you hoping families would take from this book? But I think you've covered that, really.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, as I said, an insight into a different family's life. I mean, we're all curious, and children are very curious creatures. They like to know, you know, I guess, the differences in other people's worlds compared to their own, but also the similarity. It helps them, I guess, navigate their own family relationships and the changes in their own lives. And it exposes them to difference and diversity, cultivating empathy.
Yeah, recognition and empathy, both really powerful tools, aren't they?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about Tilly and what your favourite things are about her character.
Well, Tilly's 12, but she's wise far beyond her years, as often happens with glass children. She dreams of becoming a marine biologist. That's her big dream. Mm-hmm. And she has a small fish tank that is really, really important to her. And she loves to research about marine creatures and draw pictures of them in her little aqua journal that she keeps. Mm-hmm. But she lives in a rural, drought-stricken town. So there's no water anywhere. There's no water in the local pool. She doesn't even own a swimsuit. She's never learnt to swim. And because there's no pool, but also because all the other children in the town tend to go into the city for swimming lessons, but Tilly can't because all of the family's money and time is taken up with Oliver and his therapies. Oliver's her brother with autism.
Yeah.
So it seems to Tilly, her needs always come last. She is a very resourceful character. So even though she's never learnt to swim and she's not able to have swimming lessons because there's no time or money, she has taught herself to blow bubbles by filling up the bathroom sink and practicing that way. She's also very perceptive. She senses her mum's fragility and tries to help her and support her in any way that she can. She cares deeply about her family, especially her brother. She's very protective of her brother, even though it's not always easy to like him. She always loves him, but sometimes she finds it hard to like him because he destroys the things that she loves without feeling bad. And he can't even look her in the eye. He can't play with her. She doesn't even know if he really even loves her. But despite all of that, she's his biggest advocate. She's loyal and kind and considerate and brave. And she's funny and she's quite sassy as well. So she's a real mixture of a lot of kids I know.
She's very real.
She is. She's very multifaceted. And the whole story started with her voice. I mean, all of my books have started in different ways. Some have started with the first line. Some have started with a concept or even an ending.
Mm-hmm.
But this story started with a voice in my head, which makes me sound quite insane. But I think there's a fine line between creativity and insanity anyway.
Yeah.
But it started with Tilly's voice. And I tried to kind of mold her into a character that I wanted her to be, and it did not work. And I think it's why it took me so long. Eventually, I just stopped trying to direct her and let her speak, and I just kept a whole journal of her thoughts. And that basically formed the basis of this book, was that journal I kept of just Tilly. I was just channeling Tilly. So she's a very strong character, and I love her. I've grown to love her over the past 6 years. So it was hard to let go when I finished the book.
Yeah. A lot of authors say that, how attached they become to their characters.
Yeah.
And the way in which you build that relationship with your character. And I think the more in-depth that relationship is, the stronger the character, and that comes across in the book as well.
Yeah.
To find nice books to read.
Thank you for tuning in to Chats with fabulous authors and illustrators. Use your library membership to access our online children's stories at Storybox, RB Digital and Borrowbox. You might like to visit one of our branches or book the kids in for a program. You'll find lots of information at the Newcastle Library's website, newcastle.nsw.gov.au/library.
So, Deb, we'd like to ask if you could read us a short excerpt from your beautiful book, The Thing About Oliver.
Absolutely. I'll read you a little part of chapter two, which just gives you an idea of the main character of Tilly, and it sort of lets her speak for herself. When I'm a famous marine scientist, I'll live on a boat by myself. I'll snorkel on the reef all day long, and I'll know all the different kinds of fish by their scientific names and their common names. But before I can learn to snorkel, I have to be able to swim properly. And right now, I don't even own a swimsuit. Mum still hasn't taken me for swimming lessons. She did try once when our town pool was still open, but we only got as far as the front gate. Just as we were paying the entrance fee, Mum got a call from the carer. Ollie had banged his head against the kitchen counter so hard that his forehead had split open. He wasn't wearing his padded helmet. By the time we got home, there was blood everywhere and the carer was in tears. Later on at the hospital, Mum vowed she would never, ever leave Ollie with a stranger again. I gather up Oliver's wet pyjamas and sheets. No matter how many times I have to do this, I will never, ever get used to the smell. I screw up my face, turn my head away, and hold my arms out in front of me as far as I can. I head for the laundry, being careful not to trip over the toys and clothes that have been flung out into the hallway. As I open the lid of the washing machine, I think about the cleaner shrimp that spends its whole life cleaning muck from the gills of other fish. Fish from all over the reef will line up and wait to be cleaned, just like cars lining up at a car wash. At least there's only one of Oliver. Oliver's sheets and pyjamas fill the machine almost to the top. I pour in a heap of detergent and switch the machine on to the shortest cycle. I wish I could set it to the 2-hour cycle. Oliver likes the noise of the washing machine. The rhythm of it blocks out all the other sounds that bother him. It makes him sleep more deeply and for longer, but a 2-hour cycle would use too much water. We aren't allowed to waste water. We're in the middle of a drought, after all. Our front yard is a dust bowl. There's no water to spare for lawns. There's not even enough water to grow grass for all the cattle and sheep. Most of them have been sold or died. The ones that are left are being fed hay brought into town on the backs of big trucks. Our town had a swimming pool once, but now it's even drier than our front yard. For a while, it had green, slimy water. Some kids from school go into the city every Saturday for swimming lessons. We go into the city on Saturdays too, for Oliver's therapy. Once I asked Mum if I could have swimming lessons while we were there. Swimming lessons in the city cost too much money, she told me. Please, Mum, I practically begged her, how am I ever going to be a marine scientist if I don't know how to swim? But Mum just shook her head. You know how busy Saturdays are already. We have to see the occupational therapist at 11 and the speech therapist after that. A lot of our time is spent taking Oliver to different therapists. He has a speech therapist to help him learn how to talk properly. He has an occupational therapist to help make his muscles work better, but also to teach him how to do little things that other people find easy, like putting on shoes or holding a pencil or using a spoon. Oliver also sees a child psychologist to help him learn how to manage his anger. But so far, that doesn't seem to be working too well. I might not be able to swim yet, but I can blow bubbles. Helen taught me how to do that. She goes into the city every Saturday with a bunch of other kids from school for swimming lessons, so she would know. Sometimes I fill up the sink in the bathroom and practice my bubbles, mainly so that I don't forget how, but also so that when we do have money for lessons, I won't need many at all.
That's beautiful. Thanks so much. It really captures so much about Tilly and the family picture and, you know, the greater picture of her environment as well. That's brilliant. What was your favourite book as a child and why?
That is a really hard question and I get asked that quite often. Mm-hmm. there's so many that left huge impressions on me. I suppose I'll speak quite generally. I mean, I loved all the Judy Blume books. Yes. Because they were real stories, real kids and real situations. And I think that Judy Blume's had quite an influence on the way I want to write. I want to tell real stories, particularly for middle grade, you know, for that age group. Yeah, Morris G was another author who I love, not to be confused with Morris Gleitzman, who I also love, but Morris G was a New Zealand writer of adult fiction and also children's books, and he wrote a book called The World Around the Corner, and it's set in suburban New Zealand in the 80s, I think, and it's just loved the idea that in a suburban setting, there could be so much magic and mayhem going on right under people's noses if you only know where to look. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever read Morris G's books.
No,
but,
I'd never heard of him. I'll have to check him out now.
You know, it's not easy to get some of his books. He did a series called The Half Men of O, which was made into a movie. You might have heard of that one, but his books are brilliant, and I've actually been trying to get the other two books in that series. It's a trilogy. Mm-hmm. And they're out of print, so you know, some of them are worth quite a lot of money and it's quite hard to get hold of them. I digress, but Morris G, and I loved Margaret Mahe, who was mm-hmm. also, I mean, I grew up in New Zealand, so we had a lot of Margaret Mahe, C.S. Lewis, Roald Dahl, and also The Neverending Story by Michael Ende was one of my absolute favourite books as a child. You've probably read that one, have you, or seen the movie?
I've only seen the movie, actually.
The book is so much better. Okay. You should read the book.
There you go. Hot tip from Deb Kelly. Read the book. Never-ending story.
And I still, even reading children, I read children's books all the time now. And Morris Gleitzman's series, Once, Then, Now, After, is such an exceptional. That's actually my favourite middle grade series.
Yeah. Oh, look, even as adults, it's great to read that one. You know, I love the voice of Felix. I just, you know, that opening page just hooked me straight up.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I sell tons of that at the bookstore. So.
Can you let us know what you're working on now? What's your latest project?
I am working towards another middle grade novel, slightly upper middle grade, so probably for 12 to 14-year-olds, with themes of identity, friendship, family relationships again. Seems to be a theme that I like to revisit. And with regard to picture books, I'm actually working on a couple of conservation-based picture books as well. Yeah, that's sort of what I'm heading towards. But I'm also reading a lot of young adult, because eventually I would like to write a young adult novel.
So, Deb, what do you think is special about Newcastle for writers and illustrators?
Oh, there's lots of wonderful things. I mean, it's stunningly beautiful. It's not crowded like the big cities, but it's got everything you need. I think there's a huge creative scene here. I mean, people are often surprised that there are so many authors and illustrators that actually live in Newcastle, and artists of all different kinds, actors, and there's a huge creative scene that a lot of people don't really know about. Mm. I think it's getting bigger. I mean, I've only been here for 12 years in Newcastle.
Only
12 or 13 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just seen an enormous change. And the thing I love about Newcastle is that all the creative people, particularly like the children's book authors and illustrators, we're all very tight and we're all very supportive of each other's work.
Yeah, that's actually a lot of authors and illustrators have said that as when they've come in for this series. It's been interesting.
Yes. If someone's got a book launch, we're all there. If we can get there, we'll be there.
Mm.
You know, we all just show up to each other's events, whether we have our children with us or not, because we want to see each other succeed and we want to support each other. And I don't know whether that's because Newcastle is a smaller place than Sydney or Melbourne or somewhere like that, and we just all know each other really well, or whether we're just awesome, I don't know. All of the above. All of the above, yeah.
That's all. Read along together, guys.
What stories, authors or books did you love as a child? Reach out at library@ncc.nsw.gov.au.
Let's get on to the quick fire five. Are you ready?
Not really. What are you going to ask me?
Favourite sea creature?
Well, that's a hard one too. Can I say two?
Okay.
My first would be the dugong, because they are the weirdest mashup of like a dolphin and a seal and a walrus. Have you ever seen a dugong before, or a picture of one?
Yeah, I've seen one in the flesh.
Have you? In the wild? Or in...
No, it was up north somewhere when we were travelling in Queensland.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're just beautiful. I love them. I think they're so gentle, and they're just something mesmerising about them.
They're amazing, and they're vegetarian, and they used to be mistaken for mermaids, you know, back in the day by the sailors. And they're actually more closely related to elephants than any other creature, which I think is incredible.
Mm.
And I have just actually published a book with Hachette called Dugong Magic, which is a conservation-based picture book all about dugongs. And there was really nothing out there in terms of picture books about dugongs. So I had a lot of fun researching that. And the other favourite sea creature is nudibranchs. Do you know what a nudibranch is?
Yes, I do.
You do? You know all about sea creatures, don't you?
No, only because, and again, it was from a picture book. When one of my sons was very young, we had to identify all the different creatures in the bottom of, you know, in the bottom of the sea, and the nudibranch was one of them.
You know what it means, right? Nudibranch means naked lung, because their lungs are on the outside of their body.
Well, I never knew that.
So you know the little bit that sticks up out the top of them? It looks like a little tree, kind of. Yeah, that's actually their lungs. They're kind of like a type of sea slug, but they obviously, you know, they come in all different bright colours. And there's one called the Spanish Dancer, which is all frilly and black and red. And when it moves through the water, it looks like a Spanish dancer's dress ruffling and swaying. So, I just love nudibranchs. I've seen them when I've been scuba diving.
Fantastic. Well, there you go, folks. There's a few things to look up if you're not familiar with a dugong or a nudibranch. That's something you can do. Now, back to our quick fire five. That was the first one. My gosh, this has been to be quick.
Sorry.
That's all right. So,
a simple answer. I can't eat either because I'm on a special diet at the moment for my zucchini.
There you go, zucchini. Okay, best beach.
Redhead at the end of the day, just before the sun goes down, all the colours.
Favourite ice cream?
Would have to be Hokey Pokey because I am a New Zealander. So.
Okay, we'll give you that. And picture books or chapter books?
To read or to write?
Let's do a read first.
Both. I still read picture books a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I read anything and everything. So, yeah, I think they're equally important. I can't pick one.
That's fine. I'd go with that. And that brings us to the end of our Quickfire Five and the end of our time with you. Thanks so much, Deb Kelly, for coming along to have a chat with us on Chats with Fabulous Children's Authors and Illustrators.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
Thanks so much for listening to Chats with Fabulous Children's Authors and Illustrators. Rate and review us wherever you listen to keep our story going. This has been a Newcastle Libraries Real production.